Hello everyone, this is Sean Ennis with the MMA TorchCast for August 17th, 2007. Joining me this week is Jerry Cataline. Jerry, how's it going?
It is going real well, Sean. Good to be back. I apologize to both of our listeners that we've been gone so long.
Yeah, I will second that. We had good intentions many times trying to get something together, and just been a busy time for all of us, and we just never got around to it. So we're going to get back into the rhythm here. Start recording again, and we'll have them back up on a regular basis for all of our fans out there that like both that enjoy the podcast.
Our mom, our wives.
Yeah, exactly. So there's we haven't talked since our UFC 73 roundup. Been a lot going on since then. Obviously, the whole steroids thing came out. We won't talk about that too much tonight. That was going to be our main topic on our last podcast when we tried to get the three-person thing going with you and I and Mike Jarslick. It was kind of materialized.
Instigator.
What's that?
You instigator.
Yeah. I tried to keep the argument going, but it just didn't work out that way for some reason. So we'll kind of leave that one alone for a little while. Hopefully it won't be a topic that we have to address at least at this kind of length again.
Sean, it clearly will be. We'll get back to it one point or another, because I think the one thing that Jars and I agreed on was that it's going to be a recurring theme.
Yeah.
For a while.
Yeah. I'm a hopeless optimist, call me that, but hopefully you don't have to talk about it too much anyway.
Isn't that kind of an oxymoron, a hopeless optimist?
I guess you could look at it that way.
And we're back.
And we're back. So let's look at a few of the things that we have going on here. We've got a couple of big free agents. Obviously, we've still got people out in the market. I don't know how much you've been keeping up with Fedor's situation. What's your take on Fedor? How he's doing right now? What he's doing right now, and what he should do?
You know, I am still not. It's hard to be such an MMA noob and not really buy into the Fedor mystique that is clearly everywhere else on nearly every other MMA website. Now, there's no contesting this guy's record and his dominance and pride, but, you know, MMA is very much a what-have-you-done-lately sort of organization right now. Now, and if you look back recently, he has not been, how can I put it, active in a dominant way. I mean, you know, arm-barring Matt Lindland, who at best is a strong middleweight, you know, very good, and, you know, obviously in his own weight division, Matt Lindland is an outstanding fighter, but he's not a heavyweight. It's not appropriate to judge him on that sort of scale. I don't see Fedor signing in the UFC anytime soon. And, you know, from what I've seen and read and interpreted, you know, his handlers and promoters are not really big fans of the UFC style of negotiation, which I guess can best be characterized as take it or leave it. I think they're also very much team players and want most of the Russian Red Devil team to be focused in on as well as Fedor in these events, and obviously the UFC is not interested in that. And I'm not sure you're going to see Fedor in the UFC, you know, which clearly is the dominant North American promotion anytime soon. And I guess the danger is that he's not getting any younger. No. And, you know, most of these fighters are fighting 2, 3, 4 times a year, if not more. So I think that, you know, in terms of active, competitive, world-class fighting in the octagon, I think he stands more to lose by holding out if he feels that way himself, and that's not really for me to say sitting on my couch. But from a spectator's point of view, I think he becomes more irrelevant the longer he stays out of the limelight, quite honestly. And whether he ends up, you know, with M1 or Bodog or wherever else, I think that, to me, the question is he going to fight in the UFC or not? Because that's where the very best talent, obviously, at this point, is going to be showcased the best to the widest audience, and I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I think the point that you brought up right at the very beginning is the most telling, is that, you know, if you haven't followed MMA for, you know, more than 2-3 years at least, then you're, you know, you see the record, but big deal.
Right.
You know, because, you know, looking back at his record, his last fight of any significance was when he beat Krokop in August of 2005, you know, 2 years ago now, which was, I mean, the build-up for that fight was monumental. And the kind of money he could make in America with a couple of years of dominant fights, if it were to go that way, would just be enormous. But, you know, the whole argument for him coming to the UFC is what you said, because if he cares at all about furthering the mystique of Fedor, he's got to sign with the UFC. Because going to K1, he's not going to go to Bodog, from what I understand, because his management had a falling out with Calvin Ayer. I mean, going to K1, it's not going to do anything for him. What's he going to fight Melvin Manhoff at heavyweight?
Right.
You know, it's not going to do anything. So, you know, and to be fair, you know, the UFC does have a reputation for bullying during contract negotiations, whether deserved or not. But Fedor's management has not exactly been reasonable either. As you mentioned, they want to focus a lot on the Red Devil fight team, which, you know, to ask an organization, the biggest mixed martial arts organization in the world, to sign guys from your team in order to sign you, it's a little bit shady to me.
Well, it's negotiating. I mean,
yeah, it's a little bit, it's asking a little much, and it would set a dangerous precedent, I think, for the UFC if they were to do that.
Right. Right. They should join the IFL then.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's plenty of options for guys to fight. It's just saying Red Devil, you know. I mean, it's the same thing as, you know, it's got maybe not as much weight as Miletich or Jackson, but, you know, Fedor trains there. That says something in itself.
Well, and that in itself, though, lends it, you know, credibility. I mean,
exactly.
In terms of whether you're Team Jackson or American Top Team or Team Quest or what have you, you know, Russian Red Devils is where the, you know, rumor has it, at least, very best pound for pound and certainly heavyweight fighter in the world trains. Well,
yeah,
that should have relevance. But the problem is, like I said, the longer he doesn't fight anybody significant, the less relevant he becomes. I think if we're having this conversation 12 months from now, who cares?
Yeah, that's the whole point.
You know,
that's
it doesn't
point.
Matter. I mean, because then you're looking at 3 years since he's been anywhere.
Yep.
And fighting anybody significant. Like I said, you know, I don't want to slam Matt Lindland, but he's not a heavyweight.
Yeah, no, Matt Lindland's a middleweight.
It'd be the same thing if he took out Anderson Silva.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
Matt Lindland's the middleweight.
I mean, it's a freak show.
Yeah. And really, I mean, you know, to put on top of that, you know, his last fight of significance was 2 years ago. He's only fought four times since then.
Right.
You know, there was what's his name? Zulu, the big Brazilian guy, Zulu. There was Mark Coleman,
right.
Mark Hunt,
right.
And Lindland. I mean,
he hasn't fought any. I mean, Coleman, you know, you could say, you know, here's Mark Coleman, over the hill.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a great name, but he's got the same name as, it'd be like him fighting Royce Gracie.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, dominant in his weight class at one point or another.
Yeah.
Former champion, but
yeah,
no good.
Exactly. And what should be telling to Fedor is last October when he fought Coleman, the ovation that he got in Vegas.
I was there. They went nuts.
Yeah.
They went nuts. We went
They went
nuts.
Crazy.
It was like, you know, they had the screen at the end of the arena, and his last, you know, they had highlights from training, and I am Fedor, I am coming. And it was like,
yeah.
People,
yeah.
Their mind. I mean, you would have thought it was Elvis Presley walking down the ramp, and people lost their mind. And that was, like I said, like you say, that was a little bit of time ago.
He's
become more irrelevant as time goes by.
Yeah, and the fact that he got that kind of ovation in an organization that ran, and that was their first American event. You know,
right.
and he gets that kind of response from that crowd. Imagine what he could do in the UFC if he was still the same kind. And the thing is, we don't even know if he's the same kind of fighter that he was.
Right.
You know, if he's not, maybe it's to his advantage not to come to the UFC.
Right.
But I think the thing that kills everybody I mean, it's like torture, you know. You want to see you. I can't imagine. Can you imagine if Couture beats Gonzaga next week? And I know you don't think he will.
No, I don't think.
But if Couture beats Gonzaga next week, he has to fight Fedor. He's got to. And if that doesn't happen,
why? What has Fedor done to recently to earn a shot at right now? What is the most prestigious heavyweight title in the world? Right
well,
now.
That's the thing. He would have to do it. He would have to do it before the end of the year.
I mean,
because
can you
I mean,
pull Jackson and roll him in for a fight. I mean, I would think that. You know, this is fairy tale wishing. He's not fighting in the UFC. He's just not. He's not. From everything I understand, he is comfortable fighting in Russia, in Eastern Europe, for promotions up there. He likes being around his home country.
Yeah.
I don't think he has any intention of signing with the UFC because I would think that Zuffa has probably offered him a trainload of money.
Oh, yeah.
Come to the UFC. Even with lousy terms, you know, you only fight first. But, I mean, let's face it. If you're fighting in the UFC at this point in time, in August of 2007, you are fighting in the top dog organization.
Yeah.
And when you are somebody with his name appeal, you are making the most money.
Yeah.
Now, I would look at it, and again, I've read things about the negotiations where they're asking for more than Zuffa wants to pay. But still, you know, to me, you know, the potential for Fedor to make just loads and loads and loads and loads of money is just extravagantly high.
Yeah.
If he's the same guy.
Yeah.
But that's up for a question. Let's say Couture wins. I mean, to me, you have a couple good contenders out there still that make, you know, good stylistic fights for him. I don't think he's going to beat Gonzaga. I truly don't. But having said that, you still have Cop in the wings. You still have Brandon Vera in the wings. You still have Andrei Arlovsky out there, who theoretically is making his way back. I mean, there are guys out there to fight still. Yeah, and, I mean, lest we forget Big Nog, who wasn't terribly impressive, but still, I mean, the heavyweight division is not what it was 16 months ago, where 16 months ago you needed, not you, but UFC needed Fedor in the division. It is not the same way now. I think the landscape has changed some. And I think as time goes on, it will, the potential for it to change away from Fedor further is dramatic. But
no, I do agree with you. I do agree with you on that point. I mean, I'm still in denial. I know that the everything is pointing towards him not going to the UFC, but I have to hope.
New school.
I know.
I keep telling you.
I know.
You know, I would love to see it personally. I would love to see it. In the long summer vacation here, I happened to catch the Fedor Krokop fight from which was I think 3 years ago now.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if that even that Fedor who looked good, I think he'd have his hands full with a number of guys in the UFC heavyweight division right now. I really think he would.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he would be the quote-unquote dominant champion that everybody thinks he would be. I mean, and that may make me a heretic, but I just don't see it. He's not overly big. He bleeds. He's very well-rounded. He's very well-skilled. But, I could just see him having his hands full with four or five guys in the division. You know, certainly not a walkover champion.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that's the great thing about Fedor is that he was almost never dominant in victory, but he always won.
But he always won.
I mean, that was the thing with Fedor is that he, you know, you're right. He's a bleeder. He bled against Matt Lindland, but he always finds a way to win. He was dropped on his head, power slam by Kevin Randleman.
Kevin Randleman, I thought he broke
and submitted him.
Yeah.
You know, it's time after time he would just come back from what seemed like unbeatable things, and he would just win.
Right.
And that's it. That just added to his mystique. And I think, you know, you're absolutely right that there's guys that provide good matchups for him, and there's guys that would really give him trouble. But that's I don't know. That's what makes it so intriguing to see him come into the UFC. I hope it happens.
From a fan's perspective, I do too. I mean, I don't want to say I don't want to sit and represent that I don't want him to come to the UFC.
Right. Yeah.
I would prefer to see him in the UFC. I am just not sold on his assumed dominance. I mean, if we look at Pride fighters that have moved to UFC right now, the only one that has shown absolute proficiency, but certainly an adaptation of the octagon game is the light heavyweight champion, Quentin Jackson.
Yeah.
I mean, Big Nog, by all rights, should have lost that fight against Herring. I mean, I was watching that again. You know, I mean, we talked about this in the roundtable from the last pay-per-view. And I, for the life of me, cannot understand why Herring didn't finish him off.
Yeah.
I mean, other than the, I fought this guy twice before and I don't want to get caught. But, I mean, if that was the first time they had faced each other or it was a different fighter, Nog would have lost. I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, he was out. Anyway, so the point is, I guess, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, for all of the old schoolers out there, I wouldn't cross your fingers about seeing him on UFC pay-per-view anytime soon.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it'll happen. You'll see him with Elite XC, or I'm not sure you'll see, you know, probably won't see him with Bodog again anytime soon, but...
No, I can't imagine.
You'll be trying to catch him on Showtime eventually. I think that's where he'll end up, if at all.
I don't know. I think if he comes to America, I think he comes to the UFC. Because I don't think Elite XC could afford him. I think he'll either go to K1 or the UFC if he goes somewhere.
I think he has a definitive idea of where he wants to fight.
Yeah.
And that rules him a little more than money.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. We'll see, I guess.
We'll see. I mean, the time will tell, but...
Yeah. Yeah. So, speaking of guys going places, we got the official announcement from the UFC that Brandon Vera is making his return. We don't know when. We know as soon as October. We don't know exactly when or who he would fight. What's your take on Vera at this point?
Good for him. Good for him, good for us. Good, young, exciting heavyweight. I am all in favor of this. Again, I mean, this is a guy that's developed his personality and style. Most casual fans have an idea of what he brings to the table, and I think it's great. I didn't want to see him kind of fall into the netherworld of the other promotions. He has a bright future. He's an exciting fighter, and I'm looking forward to seeing him. I think they're talking about him either in December or early 08.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to see him fight. I'd like to see him fight even earlier. I'd like to see him come back in at UFC 77, namely because I'm going to be there, but I'd like to see him come back then. It'll be, let's see, he fought in November of last year against Frank Mir.
Right.
So I guess time will tell if cage rust, so they say, or ring rust, whatever you want to call it. We'll see if that has an effect on him. But, you know, it's good to see that he's back on the same page with the UFC. I don't think he ever really had a falling out with them. It was mostly his management that he was having problems with, according to Dana White. So,
right.
And I think it says something also that the UFC actually issued a press release saying that he was coming back.
Right.
It seems like they're, you know, getting behind him. So I kind of wonder. I wonder what that says about who he's going to fight. I would love to see him fight Arlovski, quite honestly.
Oh, I think so, too. I think that would be a good one. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. But, you know, I kind of wonder because with guys they tend to get behind, they tend to build them up for a while. Like, if you look at a guy like Roger Huerta, you know, he's, what, 4-0 in the UFC, and he's fought all first-timers in the octagon, and he's going to fight another one next week.
Right.
So I wonder if they'll do that with Vera. I hope not, because, you know, you want to see real good fights, but at the same time, they don't want to, I'm sure they don't want to, you know, diminish him in the fans' eyes. But really, I mean, to me, and we're getting off on another tangent here, at least I am, to me, a loss means as much as a promotion makes it mean. So, you know, if Vera loses to a quality guy, I don't think that diminishes him a lot in the fans' eyes, except for the guys that say, you know, one loss and he sucks, like the guys that are all bashing Liddell after he lost to Rampage. But, you know, I guess we'll have to see what happens with Vera, but it'll be exciting to see what happens with that. And we also have Dennis Kang, which this I almost cried when I saw this, but Kang is going to be going to K1.
K1.
And he'll be fighting, it looks like he'll be fighting Kazushi Sakuraba on the 17th of next month.
Should be a good fight.
Yeah, well, give me a take on that one.
Should be a good fight.
Not to poison the water before I ask you the question, but...
No, but I have the same take you do. I was kind of disappointed to see that just because, he's another guy that, has a very well-rounded game, solid name, been around for a while, North American guy, that it would have been nice to see him in the major league promotion. Just to see where he would go, especially because I think in the 185-pound division, I think that he would, he'd bring a lot to the table and really, shake that division up quite a bit, which I think can't hurt at this point. I guess I'm a little disappointed to see him go to K1 just because, to me, that's so ESPN2 at 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not that it's not a bad promotion, and I don't mean to paint it that way, but... It's disappointing, and it makes and I guess the bigger picture to that is I wish I could be a fly on the wall for some of these negotiations they have with these guys, just to hear what they say, just to hear what the take is, just to hear what goes on behind closed doors, just because to me I can't see why you wouldn't get a guy like Dennis Kane in the UFC.
Yeah.
And it kind of goes back to the Fedor discussion. Number one guy in the world. I would think that you make concessions for that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I'm disappointed. I'm a little
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you've got the UFC middleweight division. It's top heavy right now, but, I don't see anybody beating Anderson Silva anytime soon. I mean, really. Who's got a shot? Rich Franklin is going to get his shot at in Cincinnati. Franklin's not going to beat him.
Franklin is completely not the right guy to.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
I mean, I'm a Franklin fan. I love watching Franklin. Franklin's not going to beat Silva. You saw him sitting outside the cage when Silva beat Marquardt as much
and
as
he
I
had
did.
He had the old poo look on his face.
Yeah. Yeah, he looked like he was on death row.
Yeah, he wants nothing to do with Anderson Silva. You can just
no,
and I can't.
You can't blame him.
Would
you can't blame him for sure.
He would.
But you've got Rich Franklin, and just I'll look at my lay of the land here that I did for the middleweight division. You got Rich Franklin, Martin Kampman, Terry Martin, and those are my top three guys right there. And really, Kampman is relatively unproven. He beat Talis Lightness and he beat Drew McFedries, both pretty convincingly.
Right.
But that's only two fights. He beat Crafted Wallace, but Crafted Wallace, whatever.
Yeah.
Then you got Terry Martin, he's an extremely exciting fighter, but he's another guy. He's only had two fights in the middleweight division.
Right.
And those are your top guys. It's a top-heavy division, but it's still thin.
Right.
I don't know. To me, I don't understand why you don't go out of your way to get Kang. Kang, he's so exciting and so dynamic. He could be huge in America.
Oh, I agree. But that comes down to, like I said, that's your marketing strategy, and that's your negotiating strategy with these guys. You're the big dog. You don't have to shove people out of the back door or make them take a lousy deal to fight in your promotion. Promote these guys. Get them in your promotion.
Yeah.
Make them names because it's going to make you money in the long run. And it just makes no sense. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
And
a guy like Kang, he's a guy that's easy to promote. He's an exciting fighter.
Yep.
He's already got a reputation with guys that have seen Pride. I still feel cheated that I didn't get to see him fight Filio in the middleweight Grand Prix.
Right.
And you've got Filio on the WEC. Maybe you bring him to the WEC. I don't know, but still, how do you not get Dennis Kang? I don't understand it. I really don't get it.
That makes no sense to me at all.
Yeah.
You've got
Marvin Eastman.
Right.
Who, all due respect to Marvin Eastman, he's coming back at UFC 77 saying he wants to work his way up to the title shot. If you've got Marvin Eastman challenging for the middleweight title in the UFC in 2008, then, something's off.
Right. No, I agree.
Unless Ethan pulls a Couture, you know, and I don't see that happening. I don't know. I mean, I just don't get that. How you don't pick him up.
No. Makes no sense to me. None. Which is disappointing. And again, from the perspective of a fan.
Yeah.
It's hard to watch this happen, and because guys get older, get older and they fall out, and things happen that they don't meet their potential, or an injury comes along the way, and look at Carl Parisian, he's still still waiting to get back to the top, and it's been 2 years. I mean,
and Carl, he's still a young guy, but it's. Gosh, I mean, you got a division like the welterweight division. You look at that welterweight division, and there are so many exciting matchups there.
Right.
And then you look at the middleweight division. You don't have as many. Why don't you go out of your way to get guys that are compelling? I'd watch Dennis Kang fight anybody.
Right.
You know.
Well, and see, and the thing is that, it's been proven that they have an idea who's out there, and they're not afraid to pursue them.
Yeah.
So how is it that you don't have them in your stable.
and he was never even heard him mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, these are easy guys to pick up. I mean,
Kang,
I can't imagine Kang went into the UFC with a whole list of demands, and was completely unreasonable. I just can't see that happening.
Yeah, I know he, he's big in Korea,
right.
So, I could see him maybe wanting to fight in the Spirit promotion out there or something, but other than that, I don't know. I can't imagine a situation where you're not paying big money for Dennis Kang, convincing him to come to the UFC.
Well, and again, I'm looking at this probably too simply. To me, you're a fighter, okay? You've been fighting for years, 8, 9, 10 years. You have been earning your keep for, reasonable money, but a professional fighter. And now you have this promotion in the United States that is the dominant promotion that you have the potential to make 2 to 3, maybe 5, 10 times more than you ever did previously. I don't care if you think these guys are the next coming of, Al-Qaeda. I would think you fight for them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, to secure your family's future or, because let's face it, there ain't many guys who are going to fight till they're 43 and Randy Couture.
Yeah.
That's a pretty low number of people. So I think you have to understand that. And, reach for the golden ring, man.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That was disappointing to me. So, speaking of guys, again, who are still kind of haven't been around, although this guy is signed by the UFC, Andrei Arlovsky, who has been inactive since he fought Fabricio Werdum. Although they did bring him up on the UFC 74 conference call today, but the last I saw a report on UFC Junkie, I believe it was, that they talked to Joe Silva and he wasn't being booked for anything. So, I mean, that's another baffling thing to me. I don't know how you don't get Arlovsky a fight.
Again, if you go back a little while ago, not too long ago, Andrei Arlovsky was the man.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to see how easily it is to fall down the chain.
Yeah.
Personally, I'd like to see Arlovsky fighting again, like you, sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Because I think every fight you see him kind of get a little confidence back.
Yeah.
Back. And,
He's won those two in a row. Yes, his fight against Werdum was a little bit safe. But, who doesn't have fights like that every now and then?
Right.
I don't know. You look at a guy like Matt Hughes, on the other hand, who, yes, he did beat Chris Lytle, and yes, Chris Lytle is hard to look good against, but he didn't look very good against Chris Lytle.
No.
And now he's getting a title shot, and you've got Arlovsky, who kicked the crap out of Werdum's legs the whole time. That in itself was entertaining to me. But the fight was kind of a snooze fest, but he clearly won.
Right.
So, I don't know how you don't get him in there pretty quickly, as it wasn't a very damaging fight to him.
Right.
Physically. You know, how do you not get him back in there? And same with Verdum, really. Verdum's a guy who is capable of doing really good things.
Right. Top 10 guy.
Yeah.
I don't know
how you don't get both those guys back in there as soon as you can.
Who knows? You know,
but,
who knows?
It's the penalty for being boring in the UFC, which, you know.
It might be.
It sounds goofy, but, you know, Dana White mentioned it. He said he wasn't real happy with Andre's performance. And you're like, you know, I don't know. If it's a chronic thing, then that's one thing. But Arlovski, by reputation, is a pretty dynamic fighter. I mean, yeah, he stunk it up against Sylvia, but he got hurt in the second fight. What do you want?
Right.
And then he knocked out Marcio Cruz and beat the crap out of Verdun. So, you know,
it's one of those things that's just hard to characterize.
Yeah.
Hard to characterize.
Yeah, that's for sure. Let's stay with the UFC for a couple more things. We got the HBO deal that Dana White has been harping on for, 6 months
forever.
Or so? First it was going to come by summertime, and now apparently it's going to come by wintertime. He says he guarantees it'll be done by the end of the year. I may have mentioned this before. I think I mentioned it maybe even on the first edition of the MMA Torchcast, but what's your take on an HBO deal, good or bad, and why?
I'm going to go with bad. I think anytime that you put your product on a premium channel that not most people are going to, I mean, I should say not most people, that people are going to have to decide whether they want to buy or not. I think at this point in the MMA game, I don't think you want to limit your exposure. I think you want to be out there as much as you can on something a little more accessible. Not that HBO isn't accessible, but, you know, if you look at straight percentages of who has premium channels, I think you're automatically limiting yourself a little bit. So I'm not a big fan of this deal. Now, having said that, will I subscribe to HBO when and if this deal is done? Yeah, I probably will. But,
yeah.
You know, my wallet protests. I mean, well, and, you know, $40 a month for a pay-per-view, you know, UFC on demand, a couple bucks there.
Yep.
You know, if you're in the Fight Club, and this is just one promotion, mind you.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not buying the Elite XC, you know, pay-per-views, if you're not buying any old DVDs, if you're not attending live shows, the bill is, significantly more. So, you know, take it for what it is, but there
yeah.
you go.
Yeah, I'm gonna tend to agree with you there. I think they see it as kind of a step towards legitimacy, because of HBO's history with boxing. Now, if that's the case, I don't get why you follow a sport that has clearly shot itself in the foot hundreds of times over the past 50 years.
That is one of the most bizarre. I love talking to boxing fans for that reason. I cannot possibly understand what makes you still a boxing fan.
Yeah, these are the most long-suffering fans, and I'm a fan of Philadelphia sports teams.
Right.
Boxing fans are some of the most long-suffering fans that you can have. If you're still following boxing, first of all, it's like a full-time job.
Yeah.
You know, secondly, you can't find it anywhere unless you know what to look for
and
where to look for it. You know, there's so much of it that's meaningless, and the titles don't mean anything. You know, there's no new fans because it's so incomprehensible. And this is something that they want to follow. I just don't get that.
Right.
I don't get that. I mean, I understand that the HBO's got a good reputation, but, you know, blaze your own trail. I mean, the UFC has done great on Spike TV. I don't understand why the next step is not networks, you know?
I would think that would be, I agree with you, I would think that would be the next play. You know, the next play. I cannot, for the life of me, understand that.
Yeah. And if you look at it this way, I mean, I know we both have young kids, and they're not old enough to maybe change the channel yet, but if I've got a 10, 12-year-old in the house, I don't want to order HBO, because I know what's on HBO late at night.
Right.
And I don't want my kids watching that.
Watching it, right, exactly.
You know, so what do you do then? You know, right. You're alienating that portion of your audience, which sure may not be that big, but why do you alienate anybody?
Right.
I don't get that.
It's a mystery.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's an absolute. I have no idea. I'm trying to understand the intention of the deal, and I got I'm sure mostly financially related, but. I can't believe they're not making enough money.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're charging $400 to sit, you know, within 20 rows of their product live.
Yeah,
exactly. How bad can they be doing?
Yeah. Well, they're making money. They're making money. And speaking of making money, huge deal with Spike TV, about to go through again, making them, as far as I understand, still the exclusive home for the UFC on cable. What's your take on that?
I think, well, see, and again, this is the 180 degrees from before. Again, very much in favor of that.
Yeah.
You know, again, accessible. More fan access, more visibility for your product. More visibility equals more revenue. More revenue equals bigger name fighters migrating to your product. Bigger name fighters mean better fights, mean better cards, means more satisfaction, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I have nothing bad to say about that whatsoever.
Yeah, I will half agree with you on that. I think it's a good thing for them to re-up with Spike. You know, it's great to have a good relationship with the network. I think the exclusivity thing, four letters come to mind being ESPN. You know, if that's considered cable, I don't know why they wouldn't try to get on ESPN. Maybe they are. I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something. But I mean, we've seen what happens when ESPN gets in bed with a sport. Look at the AFL. You know, the AFL gets shoved down our throats every day on SportsCenter. Nobody watches it. So imagine what happens with the UFC if the UFC were to get on ESPN. Maybe they actually get people who know what they're talking about when they commentate on the UFC. You know, they would promote the frick out of those events, you know. And ESPN has a huge viewership of sports fans, obviously.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, you're gonna hear about it if it's on ESPN. You'll hear about it on SportsCenter. You hear about it on PTI. You hear about it on all these shows. And, you know, I can't see anything but positive coming out of that except for the increased scrutiny if they don't want that, you know. I know the UFC is a privately owned company. They don't want to be real open about their salary, about their steroid testing, about all that stuff. Maybe they don't want to be scrutinized.
Right.
Who knows? I think that, you know, personally, and this, I may be completely off base here, I think that could play into why they are staying away from maybe the networks and ESPN. I don't know.
Right.
Because I think one of the first things that would come up, give it a year and a half, is fighter salaries.
Yeah, I think so too. However, like I say, I mean, if you're running the show, and it's your party, I think there's, you know, you get the impression that, you know, this is their party and it's their ball, and they want to play with their ball when they want to play with their ball, and when they're done, they want to take it home. So I think that's one of the things that's holding them up from a deal with the big four-letter company.
Yeah.
Or any negotiations they're in, because I think then you get into some muddy waters, and clearly they don't want to lose exclusivity.
Yeah.
I think once you get to the ESPN level of coverage, I think that you'll have multiple promotions that are promoting their fighters as opposed to just one private company.
Yeah.
So I think that's a long way away.
Yeah, it could be. It could very well be. It'll be interesting to see how things shake out in the next, like, 10 years, you know, with MMA. Because, I mean, to me, if the UFC, if Dana White really wants to protect the future of this sport,
right,
then he's doing things like this. You know, then he's opening the books, you know. I mean, maybe not completely, but they would have a little bit more transparency to see what actually goes on there. You know, and I'm not talking about the future like 5 years. I'm talking like 2030.
Okay.
You know, the future of the sport, the real future of the sport. I don't know. I don't know. To me, you establish the business practices in the beginning so that stuff doesn't come back to bite you in 10 years.
Right.
I mean, we've seen, and I think I mentioned this in my column, not to quote myself or anything, but, you know,
yeah, go ahead.
You see the bubble that Vince McMahon lived in for 30 years.
Right.
And
right.
Now look at it,
right.
You know?
And now look at it.
You get the scrutiny and it starts to crumble before your eyes. I mean, who knows what's going to happen with these congressional hearings, but I don't know. I think you establish good practices early. I mean, look at the NFL. You had these early owners that knew, you know, that knew how to run a league.
Right.
And now they're reaping the benefits 20 years later. I mean, those owners aren't still around. But the guys that are around now are reaping the benefits of what they did. And if Dana White wants to really preserve the future of the company, he's doing stuff like that.
Right.
That's just my take. Maybe I'm way off base. I don't know.
I don't think you are, though. I think you're kind of on the money. You know, I think what they do now is going to impact how you view MMA 10 years from now.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can overestimate that. I think that, you know, once you set these precedents, you know, it's either going to go up and steadily, gradually get larger, or it's going to become a niche sport. And
yeah.
If you have your goal to be something humongous, then you have to treat it appropriately.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to turn out one of two ways. The UFC is either going to be like the NFL in that or the NBA or whatever, in that it's going to be a league-based thing, promotion-based thing, where your promotion is your sanctioning body, or it's going to turn into boxing.
Right. Right.
Or it's going to turn into a more understandable version of boxing. I don't know.
Right.
But, you know, either you've got your one promotion that does everything, or you've got that. And if you've got your one promotion that does everything and you want it to be a mainstream thing, then you've got to show what your business practices are. Everyone knows how the NFL works.
Right.
If the NFL was a bunch of executives locked up in an office all day, it reeks of corruption.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, I don't know. I think that's what they have to do.
Right.
But, you know, who am I?
Well, it's not a matter, you know, it makes sense, though. I mean, here you are, you know, here we are broadcasting from our couch.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can see this. Well, we're not getting paid in the hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions of dollars to make these damn decisions.
Yeah.
You know, it should be obvious. You know,
yeah.
To go back to the original part of the original portion of this show, Fedor Emelianenko should be in the UFC.
Yeah.
Period. I mean, this should be a no-brainer. I mean, you give him what he wants, you drag him in, you promote the living daylights out of the guy, and he's in the UFC. And Dennis Kang, who is a known quantity in your 185 division that right now is not real even, you do the same thing, and that's what you do with these guys. I mean, but, you know, because you will reap the benefits down the road, and you still develop your young talent that's going to come along, and there you have it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, tossing Forrest Griffin in there against, Shogun Rua, to me, is a waste of young talent.
Yeah.
It's being destroyed. You know, I mean, you know, Rue is going to kill him.
Yeah, he's going to get bald.
You know, unless he has cage fright and, you know, has a hard time adjusting, but how does he not bomb the living daylights out of Forrest Griffin, who to me is a wonderful personality and a game fighter and everything that the UFC needs, but for crying out loud, you're throwing him to the wolves here.
He's going to get killed.
I mean, you know, by most accounts, he's the number one guy. I mean, it just makes no sense to me. And, it's just disappointing. It's disappointing.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, it's just disappointing.
I tend to forgive matchmaking like that at this point in the stage of MMA just because you don't have a whole ton of resources. Like, you can't really stick Kua in there with a newcomer, you know? Irresponsible almost. But
you're right. You're right. It is. It is somewhat irresponsible. However, I mean, I would think the long-term goal of having someone like a Forrest Griffin in your stable, as it were, is to make him a star. Eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe
yeah.
not a champion, but
yeah.
certainly a star.
Yeah. I think at the same time, yeah, he is going to get killed, but people are still going to love him.
Oh, you got to have him win some, though.
Yeah.
You got to have him win some.
I think he'll get a relatively easy fight after this. I can't imagine that they would put him in against Jardine, and then who did he fight last time? What's the guy's name? What's that? Yeah. Bald guy.
Bill Mahood.
No, not Bill Mahood. That was a while ago. I can't remember the guy's name.
I'm blanking.
But he fought that guy, fought a relatively safe fight. He fights Jardine, gets knocked out, fights a relatively safe fight here. He's going to get knocked out against Hua. And then I can't imagine they don't throw him in there with, somebody that he can beat.
Right.
So
I would think he's due.
Yeah.
Get a little fan favorite back again.
That's for sure.
He's due. He's just due. I mean, I feel, you kind of, I don't want to say I feel bad for him, but geez, I mean.
He certainly doesn't want our sympathy, that's for sure.
No, but for crying out loud, I mean, give the guy a fight he can win.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing. It's not embarrassing. I shouldn't say embarrassing. I think kind of some levels it is, because, I mean, he's such a public personality.
Yeah.
To put him in, I don't know. I can't believe there wasn't a better matchup for him, for Rua coming in for his first fight. I just can't believe
I think the mindset there was they wanted to showcase him. They want him to look impressive, and they want him to do it against the known quantity. And people know Forrest Griffin.
Oh, sure.
Whether they think he's a top five fighter or not, they know who he is and they know what he can do.
Right.
So, watching Rua dismantle him is going to be that's going to earn him some dap
like,
real quick.
Oh, wow, hey, okay.
Yeah, some depth, both the PTI guys.
I hate to say it, I'm an unabashed fan of of Forrest Griffin, and I don't even
know. Oh, yeah.
I just don't want to even see it. I just want to.
Yeah. But, so that's coming up. But moving on from there.
And actually, I'm gonna kind of go off on a tangent just for a minute. This
That's
kind of
fine.
A little bit what we were talking about earlier in that, we did podcasts back in the spring, and I remember we were really looking forward to Liddell Jackson, and it was a stepping off point for UFC into the mainstream for the big summer, and you were gonna have, promos and see these guys mainstream a lot more often. It was gonna become the next big thing. You had Roger Huerta on the Sports Illustrated cover. Chuck Liddell was everywhere. You even saw a little of Quentin Jackson. They were making the rounds on the sports talk shows. And here we are in essentially the dog days of August, and nothing has happened. I mean, I'm surprised that we have not seen any push into the mainstream media more than what we saw for the Liddell Jackson fight, especially with someone like Randy Couture defending the the heavyweight championship of the world, which at this point is, the most prestigious title in MMA, or at least perhaps the most recognized one.
Yeah.
And Randy Couture is as solid as a guy as you'll see in MMA. I mean, what better guy would you want on the mic? I mean, I love it when he does. I'm hoping he loses only so he'll go back behind the mic and commentary again, because he's fantastic. I mean, he's...
Yeah.
He is hands down the best guy they got on that announce team when he's there.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm really surprised by that. And I can tie that into not signing Fedor, not signing Dennis Kang, not building off some of, the whole Baroni Shamrock hype of Elite XC and kind of putting their nose into that to kind of, somehow lure some of these guys away and, just kind of messing other people up to keep their name in the news.
I'm just
very surprised.
Yeah, I agree. The next week will be interesting because they do tend to, the UFC does tend to promote on a short-term kind of basis. The big week heading into an event, they'll ramp up the hype or what have you. But you're right. I mean, Couture is a gold mine as far as an ambassador. you've got probably the best ambassador in the organization, and he's your heavyweight champion.
Right.
You know? So why isn't he on Good Morning America? Why isn't he on the Today Show?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, screw the cable stuff. He was on Rome Is Burning, and that's good. And they've been on ESPN News, but nobody watches ESPN News.
Right.
You know?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's articulate. He's well spoken.
Yeah.
He knows the game. He's been around.
He's a great story. How often do you hear about a 44-year-old heavyweight champion?
Right. I mean, you know, I just don't get it. I don't understand. It seems like the whole last 30 minutes of our podcast here has been us second guessing everything that the UFC is doing right now. Again, we're the consumers, and if we're looking at this going, what is going on? What is the matter with you people? Who's making these decisions?
Yeah. Yeah. And not to be all gloom and doom, because things are great as far as being able to see MMA for a fan.
Absolutely.
But if you're talking about getting new fans, if you're talking about taking the next step, the UFC has been phenomenal in what they've done so far. But,
right.
You know, but this, you know, the next step is what they've, I don't know if they've adequately taken it.
They haven't.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an easy one. They haven't. They haven't adequately taken it because we're complaining about it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it speaks for itself.
Yeah.
You know, we're complaining about fighters that our first two segments were fighters that should have been selected.
Yeah.
You know, picked, negotiated with, signed, trotted out at UFC 73.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what that pay-per-view needed was Fedor Emelianenko strolling to mid-cage arm-in-arm with Dana White.
Yeah.
Or Dennis King doing the same. That's what pay-per-view needed. It needed that pop.
Yeah.
Get people talking to get us through 6 weeks of summer to Randy Couture.
Yeah.
You know, and the reemergence of George St. Pierre.
Yeah.
That is what it needed. And I think they dropped the ball this summer, to be honest with you. I mean, really,
and I can't speak to what they've done in Canada, but I haven't heard anything. You want to promote a sport in Canada? You've got George friggin' St. Pierre. Come on.
I know.
Come on.
I know. I thought they were going to Montreal.
Yeah. So did we all. But,
I live a couple hours from Montreal. I was ready. I mean,
yeah.
I had my tickets. I was looking for the day to take off a whole bit.
Yeah.
You know, I just.
Yeah, I mean, this card coming up is a gold mine.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, great card.
The card is fantastic, first of all.
Right.
And you know, I don't know. I mean, you've got so many different ways to promote this. It could have been a slow burn, you know, working up to next week. And all I've seen, I mean, I saw Couture and Gonzaga on the hot list. But, you know, I mean, and part of it I can understand because there's not really anyone who knows how to cover MMA. That's on TV. You got a guy like Sam Kaplan, on the other hand, who writes for CBS Sportsline, who's excellent. He's great. But they need guys like that on TV. And that is part of the problem, that they don't have real MMA journalists in the mainstream for the most part.
Right. No,
and that's,
there aren't many, though.
Yeah, there are many.
I mean, you're not picking from a large variety of people.
Yeah, so that is part of the problem. You know, you can't really lay all the blame at the UFC's feet. But at the same time, if they, you know, I'll say it again, if they had worked out a deal to get on ESPN, ESPN would get some MMA experts.
Right.
They would get some guys who could talk competently about MMA.
Right.
I mean, there's no excuse for them not to have done it already, but they would actually do it if they stood to make money from it.
Right. I mean, like I said, the fact that you have not seen this talked about extensively, and again, I mean, we're a week and a half away. You never know. There might be something that pops up, you know, next week, and we'll be sitting there, and there'll be a little Sports Center blurb on it. But, you know, I'm not confident.
No.
You know, and then you'll see whomever, you know, promoting it. But it's just been a disappointing summer from that perspective, at least from my perspective. That
yeah.
You know, I wish I got a call. You know, so why don't you help us out, you know, promote this sport, you know, I mean,
yeah.
For crying out
you
loud,
know?
You know, I'd be happy to, Here's what you
yeah.
do. Here's what you do. You're the dominant promotion. First of all, you sign the dominant heavyweight in the world, and you see what he got left in the tank. And if you got to sign his little brother and a couple other of his teammates, so be it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what you do. And let them sink or swim on their own merit. For all you know, he'll come over here and it'll be awful.
Yeah.
And if he is, you move along.
Yeah.
But
you do it. That's the first step, is you do it.
But you do it. But you do it. But you do it.
Yeah.
It's bizarre to me.
Yeah.
Bizarre. I wish, I just wish that I could,
I know.
Grumble, grumble.
I know it.
Grumble, grumble.
Yeah. I do want to hit on, I want to hit one more thing, which is kind of an odd thing to me anyway. We talked a little bit about things we don't want our kids to see. Speaking of that, we've got Strikeforce heading to the Playboy Mansion. What's your take on this?
I think it's great. Great, super. Great. Looks like a good card. Melendez is on the card, right?
Yeah.
Play on. You know? Where do I sign up? Well, I mean, okay, listen. Let's look at it this way. Every card you see has something Playboy-esque about it.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah.
Okay, all of them do.
You're right.
So, what's wrong with this?
I don't know. To me, and maybe I'm being a prude, I don't know.
Josh Thompson's on the card.
Yeah.
Bobby
yeah.
Salford, he's funny. Daniel Pewter, how entertaining can you get?
Yeah. Well, to say nothing of the fighters. I mean, to me, this is... What's that?
So it's the venue. Oh ho!
Yeah, exactly.
To
me,
spoken.
It looks like. I mean, it seems to me like. And I know, obviously, they're not going to have naked women prancing around in the Playboy Mansion.
Well,
they're
naked, but they'll be suggestive.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's ring girls. Whatever. It's part of the game.
Right.
But it reminds me of watching UFC 70 and seeing a commercial every commercial break for Girls Gone Wild. Maybe it's a little bit different than that, but
I think that's a little over the top.
Yeah, maybe it is, but it brings it to mind for me.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. To me, I would try to get venues, and of course, you know, Strikeforce, they haven't really been in the casinos, but I would get out of venues that are casinos. And porn palaces,
you know?
Maybe it's just me.
I think in 2007, I think the Playboy Mansion is relatively tame by comparison.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably even in comparison to a casino, really.
Argument here. I'm not sure you have an argument in today's world. I think that in today's world, I think the Playboy Mansion is as reasonable a venue as a beach in Costa Rica. With 30 seconds of chick lead in every commercial break, and with two girls in grass skirts welcoming the fighters to the ring. So, I mean, I got to be honest with you. You're talking about what is essentially an American institution.
Yeah.
With girls and with bunny ears, towels, and one piece outfits. I mean, I'm not sure this is as scandalous as. I think for the modern viewer, I think for the viewer that admittedly Sean is probably 15 years younger than us and is the main beneficiary of this particular show, I think they're looking at this as tame.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right that it's about the same as what Bodog is doing.
I would say more tame than Bodog.
Yeah, admittedly,
Bodog,
I don't know a whole lot about the Playboy Mansion, but
Bodog
you're probably right.
Bodog is FHM MMA.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. And I'm not complaining. I mean, I think it's pretty well done. I tell you, I appreciate that a heck of a lot more than Strikeforce putting eight girls,
up
to the ring to try to do some sort of NFL routine in between rounds.
Yeah.
Because to me,
that's pretty horrible.
They didn't look comfortable. I thought it looked awkward, and it just
looks
silly.
Yeah, that was pretty horrible. Yeah, I will agree
with
that.
I have no problem with this card. None. Zero. In fact, I think they're having some sort of big poker tournament there, aren't they?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. I would love to try to win entry to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I will agree that it's better than the Dancing Girls. I hope they leave the Dancing Girls at home.
Well, to me, when we watched the whole I watched the Baroni. This is how hard up was. I watched the Baroni Shamrock card again.
Yeah.
For fights. And well, you know, hey, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, you do.
And I was really struck by it just looked out of place. I mean, it really looked. I mean, there were a lot of things they did in that show that tried real hard.
Yes.
And most of them went over like a lead balloon.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's fine to try hard, but don't look like you're trying hard.
Right. It's got to look
You know?
Yeah. It's kind of effortless.
And, you know, to me, I'm coming back to this. I don't care what anybody says. I'm coming back to it. Mauro Ranallo tries too hard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And everybody knows it. And he comes across as desperate to sell a product.
Oh.
And it drives me crazy.
Yeah, I agree. As far as the whole Playboy Mansion thing goes, I think it's great. I think it'll get them some publicity. I mean, it's not like they don't have shows about the girls at the Playboy Mansion now anyway, right? I mean,
yeah,
isn't there a show out there? I mean, Girls Next Door or something, right?
Yeah. I think it's on the E channel or something.
It's on the E channel they got cameras in there anyway. Who cares? So they're going to fight there. Great. All for it. You know, seriously. This strikes me more Bodog than anything else. This is like Bodog Light. This is Bodog Light. You got Daniel Pewter in there. Bobby Sox. You got a bunch of guys that, I don't want to say legitimate. You got guys that are solid, but they're a little bit of, how can I put it? Not really freak shows, but they stand out. How about that?
Yeah.
I mean, Josh Thompson stands out. Daniel Pewter stands out. Anybody who tries to, you know, Kimura Kurt Angle in a shoot fight on national TV, he stands out. I'm anxious to see. I'd like to see Melendez fight for real.
Oh yeah,
live.
Oh yeah, I'm excited to see Melendez again. That's a guy. That's a guy that the UFC needs to bring in. Frick, Gilbert Melendez. That guy's a stud. But
I'm. You know, when Zuffa hires me, you know, to start, you know, helping them recruit and run their show. You know, I think you look at these shows and you look at these guys, and most of them want to fight on the big stage.
Yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I think with most of these guys, they can have their way with in terms of negotiating. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to the elite guys. But, you know, Daniel Pewter is a good example. He wouldn't fight for UFC. You couldn't market Daniel Pewter. I mean, seriously. Oh my God! I just sitting here staring at the screen, I'm thinking to myself, you know, I can think of marketing possibilities abounding, especially if you want to stick one in Vince McMahon's face. I mean, yikes! You know, it's a great time to be a fan, but man, I would think it's got to be an even better time to be a Zuffa executive.
Boy, you are not kidding.
Potentially.
You are not kidding.
You know, I wish, you know, I just hope to see this get better. Like I said, this summer's been kind of a disappointment. I bought UFC partly to watch the fights, partly so I could discuss them on the podcast, partially so I could stay educated, partially because I'm a fan, but also partially because I wanted to see them announce a big signing.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was the hook. I really thought that was the hook. You know, I really did, and I was just so disappointed.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, you remember, when they brought back Tito Ortiz.
Right.
You know, when they brought back Jens Pulver.
Yep.
You know.
Well, when they announced Nog.
Yeah.
You know, I was psyched because I knew who he was, but, you know, nobody knew. In the audience, it was clear no one knew who he was.
Yeah.
You know, nobody knew who he was. But I'm thinking, you know, like I said, it's July. You know, they got the heavyweight title on the line in August. I would think you would have twisted some arms to make sure that Fedor Emelianenko has 3 fights for the UFC coming up. So he wants to fight in the Sambo tournament every winter. So what?
Yeah, big deal.
So
big
what?
Deal.
Big
yeah.
deal. You know, I mean, if he gets hurt doing it, then you deal with it, you know. But, just bizarre to me.
Yeah.
Absolutely bizarre to me. Blah. Anyway, back to the Strike Force card. I have no complaints with this at all. None. Zero.
Yep.
all for it. In fact, I hope they have a great card. I hope they have a great card. I hope they get a lot of buys. I hope they get a lot of publicity. I hope this is all over the place so that it makes them more of a contender.
Yeah, we will see.
Because the more I read into North American MMA, there needs to be a competitor to UFC. There just needs to
be. Well, someone has to force their hand.
Someone has to force their hand.
Because they're not doing it themselves.
No.
I mean,
they've kind of stagnated, I think. I mean,
yeah.
I don't need to see another season of The Ultimate Fighter, truthfully.
Yeah.
Really don't want to wait for Sarah Hughes until, what do they say, November?
December.
November, December. So
maybe it is November.
It's
August. The thing that's worse than that is you've got St. Pierre Koscheck, and the winner of that's supposed to get a title shot when? In May?
Right, May, yeah. So you're looking at...
Are you kidding me?
You've got basically the next 12 months of the welterweight division set.
It's the most exciting division in the UFC.
Right. They should be banging that title out every
four
months. Sarah should have defended by now.
Yeah.
Maybe not by now, but...
Well, he should be defending at the next one, you know, at 76, where they have no main event.
Yep.
You know, it's ridiculous.
Again, I think that I almost get the impression as a fan they are too confident in their own success.
Oh, they absolutely are. It's an ego trickle down effect from the top.
You can understand why Pride fans are not happy.
Yeah.
Because I went through the stage where I just got tired of listening to Pride fans after a while. You know, and
yeah.
I watched the Pride product, and I watched the very last one that was one of the most awful productions I've ever seen in my life. I started watching it at 3 a.m. Stayed up the whole time for it, I didn't understand what they were complaining about the UFC per se at the time, because I thought, this is good for MMA. But
yeah.
Now I'm starting to swing around.
Yeah, I still think that the Pride buyout was a good thing, but I say that with a but.
Mm-hmm.
But it also depends on what happens next.
It was a good thing.
It's a good thing to get the fighters together.
If the fighters come together, but right now, it's kind of stalled.
Yeah.
It's very much stalled. That's not good.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not good. Not good. Not good. Not good. You know.
Yeah.
Because this summer has been devoid of big signings.
Yeah.
And you're losing. There's only so many big fighters left.
Yeah.
Big fighters.
I mean, the UFC may be counting on the next generation of fighters and just discounting this one, which I think is a big mistake.
I think it is.
Because that if you want to corner the market on MMA, which honestly, there's the UFC and then everybody else, obviously.
Right.
But if you want to corner the market and keep it cornered, then you get everybody, and
right.
they can afford it.
Right.
You know, they can afford to get whoever they wanted to.
Right.
All of them.
Right.
So, Dana White says, we're going to have everybody, then freaking get everybody.
Right.
Why is Dennis Kang in K1? That's ridiculous.
Absolutely. To me, again, like I said, the more we talk about this, the more it's absolutely inexcusable.
Yeah.
If you're committed to have every, and remember, Dana White in his press conference, we're going to get them all.
Yeah.
We're going to get them all. Well, then, gosh darn it, get them all.
Yeah.
Do what it takes.
I mean, the thing about Dana White, and Dana White has done wonders for MMA.
Mm-hmm. No question.
Taking nothing away from Dana White.
Nope, not at all.
He is becoming the king of hyperbole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
mm-hmm.
That's fine if you want to mislead the media, and say, oh, we're nowhere near bringing in Mirko Krokop, and then you announce it to the next UFC. Whatever, that's fine.
Right.
But, boasting about what you're going to do, it's fine to say what you're not going to do and then do it,
right?
If it's a good thing. But if you're going to boast about what you're going to do and then not do it, then that's another story,
right?
And that's what he's been doing,
right? No, he has, and it's getting old.
Yeah,
it's getting old. It's getting old.
You get to a point where he's lost a lot of credibility already,
right?
Just from not being straightforward, which it's fine if you don't want to be straightforward about stuff, but. Don't expect people to listen to you,
Right. No, right. No, that's
if you're going to do that.
That's exactly right. You know, I mean, if you're gonna put the line out there, and then you're not gonna follow it up on it. Right now, your credibility is
it's greatly diminished either way.
Well, now it is, yeah, because of what has happened before. Like I said, summer, hot time, and you've had nothing.
Yeah.
You had a nothing card to start the summer, or a week, you know, not a nothing card, but a card to start the summer. And, you know, you lost a lot of audience, I think.
Yeah.
You know, leading up to a huge heavyweight title fight. I mean, like I said, I am not picking Couture to win this fight. And, you know, if he loses, what's next for Couture? Does he still fight?
Yeah.
Is he going to go back into retirement? You know, I think that, you know, this is a fight of historical proportions, regardless of who wins.
Yeah. So, well, we've beaten that subject into the ground enough for one podcast. So,
darn it.
We'll go ahead and wrap it up for now. But that's not the last time we'll talk about that, I'm sure.
No, indeed. No, I don't think the fall should be interesting, because the fall...
Yes.
The fall, I mean, I guess the one thing you can say is that summertime, you know, most people aren't watching TV, and they're outside, vacations, et cetera. Okay, fine. Well, there's your pseudo-excuse. But you have a lot to make up for this fall.
Yeah, I mean, by all indications, 74, 75, and 76 are going to be ridiculous cards.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've also got the fight night coming up, which looks pretty good in itself. But it all remains to be seen. I mean, it's lead up is one thing. It's got to deliver.
Right.
So we'll see how it goes. So on that note, any parting shots?
I think I've said it all. If you truly do listen to this podcast, please drop us a line on the message boards to drop your comments and let us know what you think. Sean and I certainly appreciate feedback and questions and input into the podcast. So your commentary is very important to us. Secondarily, since there hasn't been a whole lot going on in MMA lately, the Torch has taken it upon itself to start a fantasy football league. So we still have a few teams left if you want to get into that. Again, the corollary is you have to hit the message board and post. So aside from that, I'm looking forward to next week's card, and I think I'm ready to defend my betting championship of the world. So if you're out there and you're listening, sign into the Torch, and if you want to take a run at me, come get some.
The champ has spoken. I will second what he said. You know, get on those boards. We do monitor them. We have our own zones. If you want to post questions, post comments, tell us we're idiots, you know, whatever you want to do, anything's legal. Well, not anything, but, you know, get on the forums and talk to us. And join the Fantasy Football League, man. I'm looking forward to it. That's my third team that I have, but, hey, it's all good.
The smack is the all... And I do have a line on some prizes that are MMA-related. I will see if I can make sure they're there for the winner, whoever it may be. But it should be a good time anyway.
That is the good doctor coming through, ladies and gentlemen. So for Jerry Cataline, this is Sean Edison. Thanks for listening.